from essential retail, indoor gyms and leisure facilities and personal care services must close. People must work from home if they can, but may travel to work if this is not possible. People should not enter or leave Tier 4 areas, and Tier 4 residents must not stay overnight away from home.
The Tier 4 level has been created as a response to this new strain. In London, anti-lockdown demonstrators gathered and marched to protest the new restrictions. Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine will soon be shipped. Operation Warp Speed's General Gus Perna says there is an advantage to Moderna's vaccine over Pfizer's.
Moderna vaccine can be shipped and stored at standard freezer temperatures and is packed in containers of 100 doses each. This allows jurisdictions the flexibility to support hard-to-reach, small, and more rural areas.
Perna says distribution will begin tomorrow. CBS News correspondent Errol Barnett reports on Cleveland Police Lieutenant Delmar Henderson and Black Americans who are skeptical of the COVID-19 vaccine.
Do you understand their reluctance?
Yes, I understand because I was on the fence myself.
Recent surveys show Black Americans are less likely than other groups to want the vaccine, although trust overall is increasing. But Henderson, a former Marine, changed his mind when...
My father said that's the right thing to do. I've been serving my country my entire life, so what better way to serve my country and my community than this stage right here and receive this vaccine?
President-elect Joe Biden's transition team says it's frustrated with the level of cooperation from the Pentagon. CBS's Cammie McCormick reports.
The Biden team calls it an abrupt halt in the already limited cooperation there. They learned Thursday that meetings in the building were being pulled down. The Pentagon is offering a different assessment. It's calling this a mutually agreed upon holiday pause that begins today. The head of the Biden transition team said that is not the case. The Pentagon has an acting defense secretary who was put in the job when Mark Esper was fired.
On this day in 1997, the movie Titanic opened. It was the most expensive movie ever made up to that point. This is CBS News.
Good morning and welcome to CBS This Morning.
Join Tony DeCoppel, Anthony Mason, and Gail King weekday mornings on CBS This Morning.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I think for older people, I think they really need to understand that this product will give you the energy that you need to sustain throughout a day. Right now, I just can't hardly make it through the day if I don't start my day out. I'm taking three of each every day. Yeah, it's I'm a flag waver for the product. I believe in it. I know it's helping me. I feel more satisfied that I've got my energy level for the day. And, you know, for the last 2 weeks, I've been working over at my mom's house to get it ready to sell. It's just unbelievable. I guarantee you, if you saw me compared to the rest of the guys that are 74, yeah, you think them boys is ready for the couch. And I'm going strong all day long and have been for quite some time now.
Balance of Nature is now offering 35% off on any new preferred order. Go to balanceofnature.com today and use discount code FRUITS.
Churrasco de Brasil is an authentic Brazilian culinary experience unlike anything in Tucson. Our chefs have mastered the traditional churrasco style of cooking meat, which is sliced tableside by our gauchos. Enjoy a variety of steaks, chicken, lamb, and more, plus our extensive salad bar and hot side dish stations. Check us out today at the Tucson Mall, 150 West Wetmore, or at churrascodebrasil.com.
Time to update those old kitchen cabinets? Call the Window Depot today. The Window Depot is not only the number one warehouse for windows and doors, we now have a great selection of kitchen and bath cabinets at Tucson's best prices. The Window Depot is Tucson's top spot for granite and quartz countertops to finish the new kitchen or the replacement of that old worn out Formica. So call us today at 290-8545 or 622-6430. The Window Depot, windows, doors, granite, and new kitchens.
American Warrior Radio is paid for by Ronin Business Services. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KVOI or its sponsors.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. While technology may change, human nature is immutable. That is the thesis of a new book called Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. Throughout his book, Michael Walsh examines some of the battles that have become legendary, from Spartan's defense at Thermopylae to the siege at Alamo to his own father's battle at the Chosin Reservoir in Korea. Michael is the author of 16 works of fiction and nonfiction, and his works have been translated into more than 20 languages. His father was a Marine who landed at Incheon and survived the Battle of Chosin Reservoir. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Mr. Michael Walsh.
Thank you very much, Ben. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Michael, your book just came out, and our listeners need to know that we actually had you scheduled for earlier in the month, but your publisher said, no, we got to put it off. We're not sure we can have enough books on the shelves. They're going like hotcakes. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, we were lucky enough to sell out on our very first day on Amazon, and so we've been kind of scrambling to keep up with the demand now. Many thousands more books have been printed, and they are now available at Amazon. Unfortunately, they won't be able to get to anyone who orders them right now before Christmas, but they'll be there right after Christmas. So we're very pleased with the success of this book.
Well, Michael, I mentioned you've got six critically acclaimed novels, many of them dark, venturing into darker themes, but then you've got books on classical music and opera, and even were involved in the Disney Channel's highest-rated movie ever. You're kind of doing a jig between the dark and the light side of human nature, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess I am. I hadn't really noticed that. Any writer kind of writes what's in your mind at the time you get inspired to write it. But it's true that I've written three novels about the National Security Agency and the various security challenges that are posed to the United States. They go under the title of the Devlin series. And they are focused on things, all kinds of futuristic warfare things and things that might be going on and that keep our government awake at night. So many of our listeners will know what I'm talking about. And then I've written three other novels. One of them was a novel about a police lieutenant in New York City who's become a kind of recurring character for me, named Frankie Byrne. And he's in my novel called Exchange Alley, which is not for the squeamish or anyone under the age of 21. I wrote the sequel to the movie Casablanca, so mm-hmm. That was a big book. It was translated all over the world. It's called As Time Goes By. And a novel I'm very proud of is a fake autobiography of the great Irish-American gangster Oney Madden, whose birthday was just yesterday, as a matter of fact. He'd been 129 years old had he lived, but gangsters tend not to live that long, although he made it into his 70s. Anyway, it's a first-person account of growing up on the west side of New York and rising to the greatest bootlegger and gangster in American history, although one of the lesser known. So I thought it was time for him to tell his story. And on the other hand, as you say, I've written a lot about music. I was a classical music critic for 25 years, 16 of them at Time magazine in its last glory days. So I have the artistic side as well as the police and military side, and they've all kind of come together in this new book, Last Stands.
Mike, now I tell you, this book, and I mean this in a very complimentary way, this book is not for lazy readers. It is thoroughly researched and indexed with a lot of backup in there, but it's really for people who are willing to put the time into it. I can see why it's sold out. It really is an intriguing examination, maybe is the right word for it, but I have to ask you, why this book and why now, Michael?
Well, I wish I could give you a kind of mechanical answer. I can't. I just suddenly, about 2.5 years ago, any book you write takes quite a while to get from brain to paper to print, assuming it even gets to print, of course. That's always the trick. But about 2.5 years ago, I had just written a pair of books, one called The Devil's Pleasure Palace, and the other one called The Fiery Angel. And they are examinations of Western culture and civilization from an artistic point of view. So they're all about music, poetry, painting, opera, drama, everything that goes into making up what we call classical Western civilization. The first of them was an examination of the damage the Frankfurt School of Marxist philosophers has done to the United States in terms of sapping its cultural confidence. That was the Devil's Pleasure Palace. And the second one, the Fiery Angel, is a celebration of all of our cultural patrimony and why it's worth preserving. So I guess that led me to the next book, not really in that series, but the next logical step was to look at the men who have fought for Western civilization from the time of the Greeks at Thermopylae. In other words, we have this great culture. It's worth preserving. Now let's look at the men who fought to keep it. And so I decided to write a kind of narrative history of last stand, some famous, some not so famous, and conclude with my own father's experiences at the reservoir, which, as many of our listeners will know, all the jarheads will know, took place 70 years ago right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's now 94 years old. You know, Marines don't get killed. They just die when they want to. And so he decided that he survived the Incheon landing and the Battle of Seoul and the reservoir and later on Vietnam. So he's going to go for as long as he can. And I'm very, very proud of him. And this book is an homage to what he and the men of the 2-5 and the Marines and all of the servicemen went through at that particular battle.
And why has he not been on American Warrior Radio, Michael?
That's a good question.
Let's do it.
In Florida, he's a great. Oh, you should have him on. He's a great reader. He's still completely 100% there mentally. You know, he's a little banged up physically, Ben, because he got banged around pretty good during both those conflicts. But he's a fighter. He'll fight to the end. That's for sure.
Now, Michael, your book covers a number of. Is it 14 total that you've got in your book?
Yeah, I kind of lost track. Because there are a couple of chapters that are two, but that's
right.
About right, 14, yeah.
What was there a common theme other than, and what's interesting to me is once I got into the book, you know, some of them were last stands, like Thermopylae and the Alamo, but others weren't necessarily. Was there a common theme that you were looking for when you selected? Because goodness knows you had a multitude of battles or incidences that you could choose from. But was there one particular common theme or a series of threads that you were looking for what made the final cut to go into your book, Last Stands?
Yeah, there was. And I'm not sure I stuck to it religiously, but it occurred to me that in many, if not most, of the Last Stands in this book, the losing side winds up winning. In other words, that the sacrifice didn't go for nothing. So clearly, at Thermopylae, the Greeks eventually destroyed the Persians. At Cannae, the Roman disaster against Hannibal, and the Teutoburg Forest, to a lesser extent, the Romans eventually won. Masada and the Warsaw Ghetto, which is the chapter about the Jewish struggle against oppression from the Romans at Masada to the Germans at Warsaw. We now have a Jewish state in Israel. The Battle of Hastings, clearly Anglo-Saxons lost that battle, but they eventually won the war. Our language is primarily, at root, still Anglo-Saxon with an overlay of Norman French, but it was the Britishness of the culture that eventually subsumed the Norman conquest. So things like that, I just thought, you know, no last stand is really a waste of time. In many cases, well, for example, Roland at the Roncesvalles Pass in the Chanson de Roland, he buys enough time to get Charlemagne back and to be able to destroy the hostile forces that they're facing. One of the most interesting, I think, is the Battle of Siegetthaler, which most Americans won't have heard of before, but it's a very central battle in European history. It was fought by the Croats and the Hungarians in 1566, and they stopped the advance of the Turkish Muslims under Suleiman the Magnificent and held off the Islamic invasion of Europe for more than 100 years. So it's sometimes called the battle that saved civilization.
Michael,
anyway, that's the kind of collective thing there.
Well, I tell you, we're going to take a quick break to pay for the show. You can get a little drink of water. I tell you, one thing that really jumped out, and I appreciate this, I think you and I may be on the same page when it comes to this. I believe that a historian has a responsibility to examine an event or a series of events, not through just through the lens of our current perspective, but also the context of the time in which the event took place. And you do a fabulous job of that. I want to talk about, kick it off, talk about the Alamo when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Michael Walsh. Great new book out called Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. Stick around. You've pledged to protect our nation and community. Why not let Sandy Egg Tassati, your local farmer's insurance agent, help you protect your family? Sandy has 30 years of experience as one of farmers' leading agents. She specializes in serving military families and stands ready to review your existing policies or provide a no-obligation quote today. Sandy will help you protect your family with the same commitment and passion you have for protecting our nation. Call the Sandy Egg Tassati Agency at 520-881-8000 and get smarter about your insurance today. Again, Sandy Egg Tassati at 520-881-8000.
Diamondback has been your hometown source for all of your shooting and personal protection needs for over 17 years. We stock handguns, shotguns, and rifles from all of the major manufacturers, including Glock, SIG, Smith & Wesson, Ruger, Colt, LMT, H&K, CZ, Mossberg, and Springfield. You will find the biggest selection of holsters in Southern Arizona at Diamondback, along with all the accessories needed to maintain your firearms. Don't forget optics and the best ammo prices. AR parts are available from Magpul, Troy, Volter, GG&G, Surefire, and Odinworks. We are a Class 3 dealer, so be sure to ask about silencers. They're legal to own and hunt with in Arizona, and they make shooting more enjoyable. Training classes for novice through advanced students in pistol, rifle, and shotgun are now available. Pick up a schedule today for more details. We now have a full-time gunsmith on site. Everything from basic gun repairs to custom metalwork and Cerakote finishing. Diamondback Shooting Sports is located at 7030 East Broadway and is open 7 days a week. 886-8338. Find us at dbackshootingsports.com.
To those of you holding the blue line, listen up. Since opening their doors, the Trident Grill has always supported the men and women who wear the badges of our local, regional, and federal law enforcement agencies. That is why right now, all four Trident Grill locations and the Trident Pizza Pub are offering a 50% discount to any uniformed law enforcement professional. All day, every day. 50% discount on your meal for any uniformed law enforcement officer at all Trident Grill restaurants. Visit TridentGrill.com for menus, hours, and locations. Thank you, and stay safe.
It's Chris and Corbin, those guys from Tucson Appliance Company, the best appliance store in Tucson.
In my opinion,
ours too.
We received over 300 appliances on October 30th.
So what can we do about it?
We're going to have a holiday haggle sale. Come in and find your appliance and haggle with my holiday elf.
You mean the customers can name their price?
Come in and haggle and find out.
Only at Tucson Appliance Company, where our low price is your priority.
These days, we're all paying more attention to our health, but when's the last time you thought about your doctor?
Do you have your doctor's personal cell phone number? We do, and she answers personally.
Does your doctor recognize the expense of health care and only bill in 15-minute increments? Do they care enough about your privacy to only maintain paper records? Does your doctor make house calls? Ours does.
Dr. Lori Thomas is our hometown family doctor. She practices medicine the old-fashioned way. We love her approach, and you will too.
Be healthy and happy by visiting LoriThomasMD.com and tell her American Warrior Radio sent you.
At Jim Click and Holmes Tuttle Ford, we're saluting those who serve all November long, and that means double the Ford Military Appreciation Bonus Cash. That's an additional $1,000 off MSRP on select new 2020 Ford F-150s, Explorers, and more. You can shop 600 new Fords or apply for financing 24/7 at Jim Click Ford or HolmesTuttle.com. Or hurry into any of our three Ford locations. Get details by calling 888-877-9925.
The holidays are coming up. How about giving a truly unique gift this year? American Warrior Radio uses customized bottle breachers, and our fans love them. You can select from their extensive product lines at bottlebreacher.com. Customize your breacher with a logo or a special message to create a keepsake that will be appreciated for a lifetime. Bottle Breacher is a veteran-owned and operated company. Claim your special American Warrior Radio listener 20% discount by using the code AWR20 at checkout. Don't get caught behind the holiday rush enemy lines. Get yours at bottlebreacher.com today. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're chatting with Michael Walsh. Michael has a very an intriguing book out called Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. He examines several now legendary battles over the course of history. And a lot of the thing is, it's not a technical, tactical history book. It more is about what we can learn and what we can draw from those actions and the people who were involved in them. And Michael, really, that's what I appreciated about it. And right off the bat, of course, the first, I kind of cheated in school, I'll admit that. So the first chapter I went to was the Alamo, because when you talk about last stands, you know, legendary last stands, at least here in the United States, that jumps right to the top. And it was really interesting to me that you do such a fair job of examining both sides of that issue. And this comes up several times in your book where you're saying, look, both parties believe they were on fighting for the right side of things. And the Alamo, so often we forget that. I mean, in many ways, the Texans were interlopers. And anyway, share a little more about your philosophy when you're examining the Alamo in particular.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Ben. It turns out that a lot of these battles have many things in common on the tactical level, on the strategic level. And I wanted to link them so that you can see that, for example, when the Romans are getting crushed by Hannibal at Cannae, the Chinese are trying to do the same thing to the Marines at the Chosen Reservoir. These eternally recurring military themes come in all of these particular battles. But I wasn't trying to write, as you point out correctly, a military history that's purely on the operational and tactical level. I'm a cultural historian, so I put it in a much broader cultural context. And that's why I hope one of the reasons for the book's success is that a civilian can pick this book up, not know anything about the Marines, the Army, tactics, supply lines, et cetera, and enjoy the stories, because they will also be put in this context. And the Alamo is an interesting thing, because I say at the beginning of this chapter, which, by the way, twins the Alamo with the French Foreign Legion at Camarón during the Mexican War of Liberation, I say, can a last stand be politically incorrect? And certainly the Alamo is the most politically incorrect by our current standards battle that I talk about. It's important to remember that the reason that the Texians were there in the first place was that they had been invited in by the Mexican government under Santa Anna, who was not only their commanding general but their president, to keep the Comanches away. The Mexicans' fatal problem with holding on to the Spanish possessions in North America was that they didn't have enough people. Now, there's a reason for that, too, which is I discuss as well. The Mexicans, the Spanish, rather, were not colonizers in the sense that the British were. The British sent settlers to their colonies. The Spanish mostly exploited them and kept a kind of restive native population underneath them. So they had two very different models of how to occupy the New World. And the fact was that the Spanish Mexicans didn't have enough people, literally, to populate Texas and what was the northern part of New Spain, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, parts of California. So because they were being raided so much by the Comanches, who were great Native American Indian warriors, they asked the Anglos, the Americans, to come in and settle parts of what's now Texas. And they did. And some of them even married Mexican women and became Mexican citizens. But the group of them that was there realized they weren't getting any sucker from Mexico in their own problems, and that they were importing many, many more Anglo-Americans, and they decided to make a bid for independence. So that's the root of that. It wasn't as if the Texians were suddenly oppressed by the Mexicans. No, they had come in there at the invitation of the Mexican government and then decided, by looking at it from the Mexican point of view, to cause a lot of trouble and then fight this war for independence.
Do you see some parallels there in also the expansion of the Roman Empire? To some extent, they just got a little far out there on these frontiers, and they just couldn't support it. I mean, it became a logistics issue almost.
Oh, yeah, it's always a logistics issue, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's, as everybody knows, military people, amateurs talk strategy and professionals talk logistics. That's so clear when you look at the career of U.S. Grant, and why he beat Lee was that he was a master of logistics, and he was able to get Lee constantly turning, and being forced back just through sheer numbers, through materiel, and through willpower. The Romans had a problem, which they recognized themselves. Trajan, under the Emperor Trajan, had expanded the empire as far as it could possibly go, and then they began to pull it back. For example, in the Teutoburg Forest, which I talk about in the same chapter as Cannae, the Romans extended themselves too far across the Rhine, and they got their heads handed to them, literally their heads handed to them. They were beheaded and nailed to the trees by the Germans that they were fighting under one of their own rogue officers, Arminius, who had been sent to Rome as a hostage as a boy and grew up in the Roman military system and then turned the Romans' tactics on them. So after the Teutoburg Forest in 9 AD, the Romans never went back across the Rhine again. They decided enough is enough. You can't get too far over your skis. That's one of the
Yes, I know that particular reference myself from many tumbles down the hill. Michael,
down you go. Right?
Yeah, coming back to my teaser before the break, though, and that's one thing that really frustrates me is when people are so stuck on looking at past events through the lenses of what we know now and what we experience now and what we believe now. And I think the Alamo is a perfect whipping horse for that sort of a thing. I mean, that's what I love about your book is you look at both sides of the equation there and make sure it's very clear that it's not fair as someone sitting here in you know, 2020 to look back at whether the Texans are right or wrong or the Mexicans were right or wrong or just it was what it was in the context of when it happened.
Yeah, you can't beat up history with the lens of today. I mean, that's one of the most important lessons of history is that in each one of these battles, for example, at Sigismund, excuse me, having a frog in my throat today, I'm sorry to say, at Sigismund, the Hungarians and the Croats were fighting for Christian religion, and the Turks were fighting from Islam. Both have I still got you?
Sorry about that. Yeah, just to hear, Mike.
Yeah. Both of them were fighting for what they believed in, and the fact was that only one could win. So we can't bring our standards of today to the lessons of the past.
Do you consider that? To me, it's almost like historical malpractice, particularly when you're talking about young minds.
Yes, I believe it's cultural malpractice, and it's something I got into in both of my recent books, Devil's Pleasure Palace and Fiery Angel. You can't just dig up the past and hang it because it didn't conform to your notions of what's correct.
Do you think in doing your research, Michael, that, for example, there's certainly a lot of historical debate about whether, you know, Davy Crockett died standing on his feet, you know, fighting to the last man or Jim Bowie or any of those characters, the difference between what we saw in the John Wayne version of the Alamo versus the recent version. At the end of the day, though, it doesn't really matter, does it, to the bigger message of this of the story?
No. Well, look, you always glorify the guys on your side, especially the ones who died in these particular battles. I mean, the Romans certainly did. I think Livy is talking about, the Roman historian Livy, talking about Cannae and saying how they found a Roman soldier face down in the mud. But he had the nose and the ear of a Numidian opponent in his teeth because he fought right literally to the end. So we glorify those guys. But, you know, the question is, did Jim Bowie die gloriously lying in his bed, emptying his pistols and fighting to the end, or was he hiding in a closet? I mean, you hear all these stories in history. It treats both winners and losers differently sometimes. But it doesn't change the sacrifice, obviously.
Well, it speaks to the importance of having a good publicist, maybe. But, Michael, when we come back, another interesting theme I saw that permeated the book is not all last stands, you know, sometimes last stands have a good ending. Some, like Grant at Shiloh, that really was the springboard for him to move on to greater things. But in some cases, like in Custer's case, it cuts short a life that might have moved on to greater things. When we come back, I want to talk with you about the Battle of Shiloh and also George Armstrong Custer. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, talking with Michael Walsh. The book is Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. We'll be right back.
Military life can do a number on your back. Did you know chronic pain affects 44% of military personnel? The Joint Chiropractic is here to help, offering a discount on chiropractic care for active and retired military members and their families. Come in now to experience the Joint's exclusive military pricing of just $19 for your initial consultation, exam, and adjustment. Open evenings and weekends. No appointment or insurance required. Visit thejoint.com for a location near you in Tucson. You have our back. Let us help you with yours.
There's never been a better time to get out and enjoy our great outdoors and improve your health. Whether you're a recreational cyclist or a competitor, check out Tucson Endurance Performance Center. Owner Brian Grasky is an F-16 pilot and competed at the national level. He knows the importance of quality equipment kept in top shape. That's why Tucson Endurance Performance Center has the most experienced techs in town. Check out their variety of bicycles, equipment, and gear at TucsonEnduranceCenter.com or stop by one of their two locations, northeast corner of Oracle and Orange Grove, or in the Crossroads Festival Complex at Grant and Swan.
During this crisis, government has taken every opportunity to mask your liberty, making you dependent on them. Don't do that. Let us guide you so you can declare your financial independence. I'm Eb Wilkinson with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. That's imuswilkinson.com. Call us at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Brushfire Barbecue, Tucson's best barbecue, has adjusted to these interesting times. With takeout, curbside pickup, and delivery, there's no reason to miss out on your favorite barbecue. And now Brushfire introduces COVID-safe catering. Cater your holiday gathering with individually prepared and packed meals for every guest. Brushfire is going the extra mile for you, your friends, and your family. Always a military discount at both Tucson locations, 22nd and Kolb, or Campbell and Glenn. Check out menus, prices, and options at brushfirebbq.com or call their catering department at 520-850-0306.
For some people, difficult transitions like retirement, divorce, or loss of a loved one may contribute to feelings of hopelessness or even thoughts of suicide. The risk of suicide is even higher for men over 50 who've served our country. Guys like me. Support from friends and family makes such a big difference. Every day, your actions could help save a life. Learn how you can help at veteranscrisisline.net.
Trust. Whether you're protecting our streets or our nation, you have to trust the man or woman beside you. Curtis Plumbing has developed a reputation of trust over 40 years, and you can count on their honest, hardworking technicians to properly diagnose and fix the problem the first time. Then Tucson's most reasonable rates, always a discount for seniors and members of our military. From the smallest job to a complete install or remodel, Curtis even provides 24 hours emergency service. 323-7697, CurtisPlumbing.net.
Mortgage rates are at historic lows. Refinance and save money now or get into your dream home. The Dellinger team at Nova Home Loans finds you the best rate. 440-0516 or azfamilyfirst.com. Sean and Tiffany have a special passion for helping military and first responder families. Anywhere in Arizona, Colorado, California, or Nevada, the Dellinger team, azfamilyfirst.com. Nova Home Loans, NMLS 3087BK, 0902429. Equal housing lender.
BBG here. COVID crisis or not, for me, a great burger is essential. If that describes you, visit my friends at Divine Bovine on the corner of Wilmot and Speedway. Your nose will confirm you made the right choice even before you open the doors. Unique flavor combinations lovingly handcrafted from 100% USDA blend of chuck, brisket, and short rib, or my favorite, the farm-raised bison. Trust me, these will be the best burgers you've ever tasted. Always a 10% discount for members of our military and first responders. Start your taste buds dreaming at DivineBovineBurgers.com. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Very pleased to be speaking with Michael Walsh today. Mike is a very accomplished. Can I call you Mike? Have I been violating sure. that trust? Okay. All right. Just want to be sure.
That's perfectly fine. Yeah.
Very accomplished author. His gangster novel, And All the Saints, received the American Book Award in 2004, Also, the Devil's Pleasure Palace and the Fiery Angel examine some other themes somewhat common to the book we're talking about today, Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. Michael, I teased before the break about Shiloh, probably the most ironic place name ever for a battle.
Yes, the place of peace. Right?
Yes. And honestly, I didn't, I like to read a lot of history, particularly Civil War history, but I never really, for some reason, grasped the importance of the Battle of Shiloh. Is, I mean, really, in your book, you bring out the fact this could have been a last stand, well, it was a last stand for the South itself. I mean, this was sort of a gamble to destroy Grant's army. If they had been, if the Confederates had been successful, that would have been the end of the war, pretty much, right then and there. Maybe.
Well, it certainly would have been the end of Grant and Sherman, that's for sure. And so I've gotten some blowback on Shiloh. Well, that wasn't the last stand, blah, blah, blah. Well, actually it was, because by the end of the first day on Shiloh, the Union Army was whipped. They had been pushed all the way back to the Tennessee River. They were totally surprised by the number of Confederates that launched the Sunday morning attack on them on a beautiful April day. Grant got late to the battle because his headquarters was up the river a little bit, and he had to hop on his boat and get down there. Sherman had been shot a couple of times, very minor wounds, luckily. But he had dismissed intelligence reports that the Confederates were mobilizing and thought that they were ridiculous. So there's a very famous story, which I think is very telling. And on the end of day one, when the Union managed to hold off the Confederates and the Confederates' best general, and I think he was better than the far, far overrated Robert E. Lee, in my opinion, Albert Sidney Johnston, had been killed by a lucky shot that hit him in the leg, and he bled to death without even knowing he was dying until he fell off his horse. So Grant's down there in the rain smoking a cigar, and Sherman finds him, and he says, "Well, we had a heck of a day today, didn't we, Grant?" And Grant says, "Yep, but we'll whip him tomorrow." And that emblemizes to me why Grant was not only our greatest general ever, but maybe the greatest American who ever lived. He was calm under fire. He was decisive. His orders were generally very, very good, except for one time at Shiloh, as I discuss in the battle, when Lew Wallace was late to the battle because of an unclear order. The Union, had they lost that battle, would have lost Grant and would have lost Sherman. Sherman had just come out of a nut house, and he was regarded as mentally unstable. Grant was dogged by allegations of being an alcoholic. Even though they won, they were both still excoriated in the Northern press for the amount of bloodshed at Shiloh, which pales in comparison to Antietam and Gettysburg. But at the time, there were more American casualties in the one battle at Shiloh than there were in the entire history of the United States up to that point. So had the Confederates won, you never would have heard of Grant, you never would have heard of Sherman, and the South, I think, would have won the Civil War.
Now, and building on that, like you said, Grant had a terrible reputation. I mean, I think he'd been kicked out of the Army once already, hadn't he? Or?
Well, he had resigned his commission.
Okay.
Yeah, under cloudy circumstances, yes.
And were it not for his cool actions and maybe circumstances or who knows there at Shiloh, you're right, he would have probably died. We would have never heard of him, and he went on to be, you know, got his picture on some of our currency. The reverse maybe is also true. And I found your chapter on George Armstrong Custer, and that probably the other more famous last stand, if you will, in American history. And a lot of stuff there that I did not know about Custer. And I heard another interview where you said that might have been the worst the worst campaign event ever, the Battle of Little Bighorn, because his plans were to return and run for president, I guess, somewhere down the line.
That's true. It's true. The Custer chapter is the longest chapter in the book. It's 10,000 words. I've been a aficionado of the Little Bighorn Battle and Custer for a long time. And in fact, if you've never been to the Little Bighorn Battlefield, every American should go there.
Yeah.
It's one of the most amazing places on earth. It's the stillness of it, the expanse of it, the loneliness of it. You put yourself in the shoes of those guys on both sides who were dying up on those little tiny hillocks. Last Stand Hill is barely worthy of the name of a hill. So I've been fascinated by Custer for a long time. But one of the things about Custer, and this ties in with Grant, is Custer was one of the most, he was, as you know, he was brevet promoted from mid-range officer to general at a very, very young age. His brother Tom also fought for the Union and won two medals of honor during the campaigns. But Custer did not get along with Grant at all. What saved Custer was that he was little Phil Sheridan's boy in the cavalry. And he was also just a tremendous cavalry officer, brave, stone cold brave, had what they called Custer luck. Bullets practically bounced off of him. He was fearless. But he and Grant did not get along. And Grant, as you recall, was elected in 1868 and 1872. And at that time, going into the election of 1876, there was no real tradition of no third term for a president. That was a custom, but it wasn't kind of ironclad the way it's become. It's literally now constitutional. So Grant was thinking about running again. He didn't, as it turned out, but they thought he might. So Custer decided that if he could win this big victory in the Indian Wars, he would go back to New York City that a few days, literally a few days later, and try to get the Democrat nomination for president. In those days, they didn't have these endless two-year campaigns. You went to the convention and somebody won. So Custer was the most famous man in America at the time, and he might well have become the Democrat presidential candidate had he survived Little Bighorn.
The Little Bighorn, the battle there is another one of those where I think we do have the benefit of archaeological research now that is giving us a clearer picture. But I think that my sense has always been, in Custer, he was a brilliant tactician. There's no doubting his courage, unlike one of the other fellows involved in that battle. But
Benteen and Reno.
Yeah, lollygagging and bringing the reinforcements up. But really, was this just a case, you think, of everything that could go wrong going wrong, placed up against the contrast of some people who really, when you talk about last stands and why some of these people fight to the bitter end, I mean, the Sioux, they were doing that. They were protecting their families.
Yes, but Custer knew that. And so what he did is he used the exact same tactics he had always used throughout his life. This is a case of he went to the well one too many times. But it was also, as it almost was a fatal mistake at Shiloh, failure of intelligence. He had no idea how many Indians were in this big village, as he called it. Custer was also done in by Reno, who was later asked for a court of inquiry, effectively a court-martial, and was acquitted. But he sent Reno across the river to attack the Indians from the front, where he was going around behind them and would attack them from the rear. That's why he split his forces. Benteen was bringing up the rear with the ammunition packs and the mules. But Reno panicked, I think that's the key to the battle. He gets across the river. He's got his mounted troops with him. The Indians start to run, and Custer knew from experience that when the cavalry attacked, the Indians tended to run. So he was counting on that they'd rush back to their camp to protect their women and children. But Reno suddenly choked, and he ordered his men to dismount and form a skirmish line. And the Indians looked back, saw the cavalry was not chasing them anymore. They turned around and said, "Hey, we got a lot more guys than these guys do." And they went back and they just annihilated Reno. He was forced back across the river with heavy losses. And he really cut the legs out from Custer's strategy.
Michael,
and that's one of the reasons that Custer was so vulnerable.
I mean, I'm no expert, but, you know, one of the worst things about you can do to a cavalry is take them off their horses.
Take them off their horses.
That's the advantage, right?
Right. Yeah, that was really a very dumb thing to do. But that's what happened, and that's why Custer was so vulnerable, because the Indians could regroup. And then they went across the river and pushed Custer back and pushed him. The Custer was over in just a few minutes. They were so unable to resist that rush of very, very angry Sioux and Cheyenne warriors who had been, you know, driven into an ecstatic trance of dead soldiers falling from the sky by Sitting Bull's vision. They had no chance whatsoever. It was literally a massacre, but it was one they brought on themselves.
One of the things, and with the great guest, time always flies, Michael, but just it's interesting in your book when you're talking about Grant, there was a point at Shiloh where Grant, it became very apparent to him that this was going to be a battle to the death. And he's talking about the war in total. And really, the only victory would be an unconditional surrender by the South. Do you think, and let me just plant this seed when we talk about this when we come back from the break. One of the things I've noticed, and I think you touch on in your book, is it seems like we no longer fight wars to win. We are just fighting a series of skirmishes almost. And whether the unconditional surrender grant vision has been lost completely to history. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're chatting with Michael Walsh. His latest book is called Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. We'll be right back. At The Specialist, they know the best quality window tint, paint protection, and alarm systems can defend your car. They do their job whether you're thinking about it or not. The Specialists remind you to take a moment to pause and thank those men and women who are protecting your rights, your freedoms, and your family. Many are doing so today, whether you're thinking about it or not. If you're a member of our armed forces looking to protect your vehicle, please visit any of the three locations in Tucson and one in Sierra Vista. Ask for your military discount. You've earned it. Find out more at az-specialist.com or call 795-430.
Hey friends, if you're thinking of downsizing or selling your home for any reason, there's never been a better time, but don't do it alone. Give my friends David and Rebecca Guthrie from the Hacienda Group a call at 520-406-4702. They have the connections, tools, and support to supercharge selling your home or even helping you buy the perfect place. If you're in the military, ask them about the special Military on the Move program. Learn more by visiting hacienda-group.com or tune in to hear David and Rebecca Saturdays at 11 a.m. right here on KVOI. Long Companies Realty, BR 566-85-4000.
Trident Grill, Tucson's most military and first responder friendly restaurant, is still supporting our brave men and women on the front lines by offering a 50% discount to any uniformed law enforcement professional. There's never been a more important time to support local restaurants. Give the gift of great food this holiday season. Right now, if you buy a $50 Trident gift card, they'll add another $10. Buy a $100 gift card and they'll throw in another $25. Good at all four Trident Grill locations and Trident Pizza Pub. Order your Trident Grill gift cards today at TridentGrill.com. That's TridentGrill.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee is working to identify transportation priorities for the region. These priorities will guide development of an RTA continuation plan for projects beyond June 2026. The RTA's current 20-year transportation plan is funded by a state-established, voter-approved special taxing district within Pima County. To learn more about RTA's continuation plan, funding options, and how you can provide input, visit rtamobility.com.
Whether you're a member of our military, a first responder, or a hardworking civilian, a good cup of coffee can help you take on the storms of your day. Start your Java conquest at Filthy Pirate Coffee. Veteran-owned and operated, Filthy Pirate Coffee produces premium, low-acidity, non-bitter coffee for scallywags just like you. All their beans are sourced from family-owned farms, so you can feel good about the coffee that makes you feel good. Pick up some coffee from the Pirate's Port at 2040 Orange Grove or place an order for delivery via filthypirate.coffee. Join their merry band today, filthypirate.coffee.
Hello friends, BBG here. One of the cool things about being a radio host is the opportunity to tell my friends about great products. I carry Ride-On Optics on my rifle, and here's why you should too. High quality optics at the best possible prices, and every unit comes with an unlimited lifetime warranty. Of course, I love that they're the world's only military and law enforcement owned optics company. Advanced features and crystal clear glass means Ride-On has the right product for you. Hunting, tactical use, and long range shooting. Available at retailers or online at ritonoptics.com. See the difference for yourself. Ride-On Optics.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Hi, this is Craig Morgan. During this crisis, homeless veterans are alone, often sleeping on nothing more than a piece of cardboard. We need to act now. You have the power to move them from cardboard to headboard. Every dollar donated to Veterans Matters moves a homeless hero from the streets into their own home. To help, visit cardboardtoheadboard.org. They are not alone. They have you.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Just a heck of a chat with Michael Walsh. He's got a great new book out called Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. And Michael, I promised I wouldn't get into politics here on the show, but from a military standpoint, for example, looking at famous last stands, at maybe not quite a last stand, thank goodness, but we've had Clint Romisha on. He was a recipient of the Medal of Honor for actions at the Battle of Kamdesh, the subject of the new movie out called The Outpost. So things have not changed from the Spartans to current day, but I'm trying to think of the last time we actually fought a war to win it. I mean, the unconditional surrender kind of concept versus just going in and blooding some noses and then coming home.
Before I answer that question, let me give a shout out to Davis Monthan, everybody at the Davis Monthan base there in Tucson. I had a buddy who was a warthog driver there for years and an instructor, and I got a chance to tour the base with him. And thanks for all the great work you do. And I should also tell our listeners that I myself, although I was never in the military, I was born at the Marine Corps base in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So go Jarheads too. As to your question, I think it answers itself. You know, when was the last time we won a war? When was the last time we fought a war to win it is really the question. And that goes to civilians. That's not on the military. The military can only do what the civilian leadership tells it what the objective is. And I think the simplest way to answer that is that the fact that we're still in Afghanistan since almost 20 years now does not reflect well on the civilian leadership of the United States.
Let's talk about the most famous tie ever, Korea, and in particular, probably the biggest hero that you had in your book, some guy by the name of First Lieutenant John J. Walsh, soon to be coming up on American Warrior Radio. Let's hope.
Yeah, I hope so. I should also mention that although we're as Irish as Paddy's pig, and in fact, I live in Ireland a great deal of the year, I rebuilt his grandmother's birthplace. He's also, as am I, part Native American. So he had a Mi'kmaq Indian from Nova Scotia as his other grandmother. So we're very proud of both those sets of heritages. And I know in the Marines especially, there's a disproportionate, shall we say, a number of both Irish Americans and Native Americans in that service, and as well as the Southwestern Hispanics, too. I love the Southwest, and go into any church and you see how many of those young boys of Spanish heritage are wearing Marine Corps uniforms. It's something to make you proud of this country.
And I tell you what jumped out to me in talking about your chapter on the Chosen Reservoir, and we've had a number of survivors on American Warrior Radio before. You say every soldier's story is the same, but every soldier's story is different. And one of the things I see that came out to me in that chapter is things that, Michael, we've heard from so many heroes that we've had on the show. And it's almost, I don't want to say it's a shrug, but they say, I was doing my job. And your dad in particular says, you know, follow your training, do your job. If you do it, you might get killed. If you don't do it, you will get killed.
Yeah, well, that was me adding to him.
Oh, okay.
What he said was, because I asked him, I said, you know, were you ever scared? That was a silly question, but I had to ask him. This was only just about a year and a half ago when I did those interviews. He shrugged it off, like you said, Ben. He said, we went to work. That's what we do. And what they understand, what every service member understands, is if you panic, you will die. That's it. And the history of from Thermopylae to the present is if you panic, you will die. The Romans at Cannae panicked and they died. 75,000 of them put to the sword in one day. That's a hell of a slaughter. But it was made possible by the outnumbered Carthaginian forces by the fact that the Romans broke. So you can't break. You have to stay in formation. That's what hold the line means. You know, we're hearing a lot of this today in the current political situation. You got to hold the line. Well, hold the line is a military term. It goes back to Alexander, probably before that. When your center breaks, you try not to get your flanks turned, and you try to keep your center line holding, you have a chance to win. And that's what the Marines did. They did it the hardest way possible, which was a fighting retreat. So they weren't even holding. They were moving back, but preventing the Chinese from overrunning them and annihilating them. And that would have been the end of the United States Marine Corps, because that 1st Marine Division effectively was the Marine Corps. And that would have been the end. So it was the last stand for the Marines in a way that they ended up winning, as we know.
You know, Michael, it's interesting that the looking at it from a detached perspective like I am as a first-time reader of the book, you know, you see some recurring, not necessarily themes, but to me it's interesting when your father was talking about, or you're talking about Chosen, and just the stacked frozen bodies that were all across the field of battle. And then I go back to one we won't be able to discuss today, but Pavlov's house during the Battle of Stalingrad, and the fact that those Russian defenders literally had to go out and remove the German bodies because there were so many of them, they were actually blocking their fields of fire from that that famous house there. But the one thing that was interesting to me, and I'd get your perspective on, the how would these battles then leverage or be used to build upon other battles? Everybody, you know, remember the Alamo, the famous battle cry. Masada, never again. To what extent do you believe that these famous last stands have then led to other victories through the inspiration?
Another example of that, well, there are two. The French Foreign Legion at Comodon, which was annihilated by Mexican forces in that battle, that day is observed every year as they honor the sacrifice that they made, and Captain Daljeu's wooden hand is on display in the Foreign Legion Museum, and also the Swiss Guard. They fought to the death to save the Pope. I forget which Pope it was now off the top of my head. He's such a bad Pope, I've repressed his name. But they got him across the Tiber and into the Castel San Angelo, and new Swiss guardsmen who must be Catholic and must be have military experience before they put on the 16th century pantaloons. They are sworn in on that day of the defense of St. Peter's against the Lutheran forces.
This is a whole nother show, Michael, but again, I encourage people to read Last Stands. There's a lot of lessons that can be taken from this, and lessons from 1,000 years ago, lessons from, you know, a little more contemporary battles. What one thing or two things are you hoping folks will take from this book, Michael?
I want them to have pride in America and in Western civilization. Many of the battles are between the West and the East. So obviously the Greeks against the Persians, or the fights the British had in Africa. I talk about Rorke's Drift, which everyone's seen the movie Zulu. Knows that battle. Or General Gordon defending Khartoum against the Mahdi. Remember that there's honorable people on both sides, that the men fight for what they believe in. But I think the takeaway lesson for the civilians is this: men don't fight for duty, honor, country. Those are things that evolve out of what they do. What they fight for, not even their wives and women and children, or now that we have women in the military, their families as well. They fight for each other because that's all they have. When you're overrun, 30 below zero weather, really the only friend you've got is the guy next to you in a rifle. If you're in the Roman legions and you're in the maniples, you're in the front, your shield is to your left, your sword is to your right. You're protecting your buddy to your right because he's fighting to his right. Everybody supports the other guy. And as we said earlier, when the lines break, when panic sets in, it's every man for himself, and that is death. And we cannot ever absorb that lesson strongly enough that we have to fight for each other. And we lose that lesson sometimes.
Michael, thank you so much for spending your time with our listeners today. I want to close with just the wrap-up paragraphs from your book, and it made me think so often we've had men and women on this show who are wonderful human beings, but they have that ability to flip the switch and do very, very nasty things when it's called for. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael's last phrases, and then it is up to the warrior. The warrior is as the warrior does. In the field, the warrior does not negotiate, beg, or bargain, for it is for no use. History and retrospect may regard him as a hero, villain, or simply anonymous cannon fodder. I'll leave it at that. Ladies and gentlemen, find this podcast and others, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Deezer. We're all over the place. Most importantly, please find these messages and share them. Take care.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station.